It's Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks insider Thomas Dratz, also covering the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We are back
with sunglasses, tan lines.
That's right.
And a week's worth of pent-up takes.
Yeah.
How many takes have you like spent a week being like, ah, I need to share? I was like sharing them with Canucks fans at the resort.
just a search around. Anyone want to hear some Canucks takes?
Yeah.
Anyone here? Anyone here from Vancouver? I need to talk about the Canucks.
You have a BC Lions hat. How are you, sir?
What do you think about Nils Höglander?
And I also want to shout out Shane from the airport last night. Big Canucks Talk listener. We ended up splitting a cab.
There you go.
Which he actually covered. So thanks to Shane.
Wow. All right. Thanks. Yeah. Shout out to Shane. Excited to be back. We are tanned somewhat, at least. As tanned as we get, I guess. Tanned, ready, and rested.
You don't get tanned?
I'm pretty careful with the sunscreen, the hat.
Oh, yeah,
all thing, you know, I take precautions.
Yeah,
I'm very responsible like that. I'm excited.
I'm not.
I'm thrilled. The thing that's blowing my mind the most, and by the way, I'm in like full playoff mode now. I got recharged. There are only 11 games left in the regular season. We're like less than a month away from the start of the playoffs. I'm going to be amped up, energized from now till whenever the season ends. I'm excited.
Well, that's a good start to a day in which the Canucks can do something they haven't done since 2015.
Yes.
Which is clinch a playoff spot over the course of a full 82-game season.
By the way, just before we get into that and the whiteboard, the thing that's blowing my mind the most right now is that we took a week off. They had already played multiple games before we left on this homestand, and they still have a week and three games left on this homestand. Like, it is like... They're still here until Sunday. They have three more games left on this homestand. Well, it's wild.
And we've had so many like stories come out of this homestand already. Like, the team is struggling. What's wrong with the special teams? You know what I mean? Like,
your thing about, you had the line earlier of a season of like, a season is long enough for every take to be both wrong and right. That's,
yes,
this homestand though, actually. Also.
100%.
Like, it's been enough for like multiple ups and downs just on this homestand.
And now I'd argue like those last three games, we'll get into it in the whiteboard, but I'd argue that those last three games have been some of their most impressive of the season. By the way, shout out to my resort also for getting CBC.
Oh, wow.
I got
that is huge.
Yeah, I didn't even have to work to get the Saturday game, which was great. Well, I guess I had to explain myself to my wife,
yes,
but that was it. And then, and then you've got this really interesting game tonight, right? Where the clinching obviously is going to matter a lot to Canucks fans who will change their display photos to have little X's.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it matters that fans in this market, like, think about how seminal.
Well, hold on. Let's start the whiteboard.
Yeah, let's start.
If we're going to talk about it, let's start the whiteboard. Let's get into it.
I desperately want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Clearly. I like can't even wait for the whiteboard to open.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
All right, it is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 25th, starting with the headlines. And yeah, the headline is, for me, there's a lot we can talk about. And I think
There's only one right
place to start.
Maybe
in the next segment we'll get into, you know, what did we miss over the week? Our listeners can catch us up for anything that might have flown under our radar. But tonight it is. The Canucks can clinch a playoff spot if they get a win against the Kings, and if St. Louis loses in any form,
in any
regulation
fashion
or otherwise, against the Vegas Golden Knights. And it's a big deal because we've known for months now, basically, that this team is going to the playoffs.
Yes.
Right? I know there's been some people, some holdouts, right? Oh, I don't know. Who knows? They could collapse.
Do you see there was one guy on Twitter today who was like, I'm still convinced that they're going to... And I was just like, man, that is the most Canucks fan mentality of all
but
time.
But we've known for months that they're going to the playoffs in some shape or form. But to have a chance to clinch and officially book it in March with 11 games left,
first
to be the first team in the league to do it, that's remarkable. And it really speaks to just how impressive this season has been, that they're not going to need to sweat it at all. 0% of a sweat to make a playoff spot. That's hard to do. Like, even Vegas, who looks to be probably home free now, pending, you know, the game against St. Louis tonight, like, they've had to sweat it out a little bit here. You flip a couple of results from the last week, and Vegas could be in big, big trouble to make the playoffs. It's hard to coast this early into the playoffs and book your spot in the NHL. And it's, I mean, I certainly didn't see this coming at the beginning of the year. It's incredible.
Well, so it's an interesting dichotomy because this team making the playoffs, right, is an accomplishment and it matters a lot, but it matters a lot for the city and the fans in some ways. The outcome itself is a fat part of the bell curve outcome, right? Like
making the playoffs.
Yeah. That was like a, you know, within the fat part of this team's bell curve, it was like a 50-50.
Yeah.
You know, maybe slightly weighted toward them making the playoffs or against, depending on whether you were using Vegas or Dom's model. In terms of doing it this early, right? That's where you get to, wow, what a season territory.
Yeah.
Wow, who saw that? Who saw this team being the first team to qualify?
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nobody out there. And by the way, if you did, I hope you wagered on it.
Yes.
Like, I hope you
got those President's Trophy
division title long shot tickets in. So coming back to the fan side of this, right? 9 years between playoff home games, something that's going to end in the next month. Like, I remember things like the Quilchina school barbecue in May, where the Canucks were playing the Leafs in the conference final when I was nine or seven, excuse me. And, you know, it like set up in the gym, right? The TV and like being so hyped on all that stuff. Like being in the playoffs, having the opportunity to see your team in the playoffs, which the last time this team went on a run, fans
they
couldn't
did not.
Do.
Yep.
That matters so much in terms of building that like generational fandom, in terms of what families want to share, you know, like a hockey fan dad wants to share with their kids.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That and then what the kid takes from that, right? I have absolutely crucial, like elemental memories of seeing, you know, games against the Flames in 94, or game six against the Rangers, you know, at Pacific Coliseum. Granted, you have to go a little further before you get to that point of Seminole. Just to have that opportunity, I think, matters, and to have that clinched matters a ton. But in terms of what tonight actually represents big picture, right, for this team and how we evaluate them, to put on the cool, rational analyst hat thing, like, what I'm curious about is, I think this team's played some of their most impressive hockey while we've been on vacation the last week. And now you're playing a really good team, a team that you have been in. I know the Kings trounced them the first game, but it was still kind of one of those coin flip. Like, if the Canucks had scored first.
100%. Totally different game.
It was way closer than the scoreline indicated, just like I thought the Kings were the better team in the game the Canucks won. So, but both of these games have been tight, like close. And getting that little X, not that it's a huge amount of pressure on a team, but I promise you everyone knows.
Oh, yeah.
Promise you every guy in that locker room knows. So to go out, you're rolling. You've got a really good opponent coming in, and now you've got to win a game that means something. It doesn't mean everything, but it means something. I think that's just like an interesting test for a team that's at the precipice of punching their ticket. You know, can they perform through that? Can they give themselves the shot of having that meaningful celebration? Because I guarantee you, the arena is going to be rocking tonight if they win. Can they perform despite some of that external noise, external pressure that naturally comes when you've got an opportunity in front of you to actually win something that matters?
And I do think, as much as you say, you know, and by the way, the Canucks start at 6, the Blues and Golden Knights start at 5. So late in the game, you will know the result of the Blues and Golden Knights. So we'll know as the Canucks are concluding whether they are, in fact, booking their spot in the playoffs or not. And I just think, you know, even think back, the quote I keep coming back to so often, right? And we knew the moment he said it was going to be that kind of quote, was Jim Rutherford saying, we're a playoff team if everything goes right.
Right.
Well, the Canucks have proved they're actually a better team than that, right? Because, yes, a lot of things have gone right for them, but they didn't need a lot of things to go right just to make the playoffs. You know what I mean? Just to scrap for the playoffs. They needed a lot of things to go right to be where they are, to have a chance to be the first team to make the playoffs. And I think that's a really important distinction, right? Separating yourself from the teams that are scrapping for those seventh and eighth spots to where they are, that's meaningful. That's really meaningful.
See, that I kind of disagree with that, because it's not just that everything went right for the Canucks. It's that everything went super right for the Canucks.
Sure.
Like to a historic degree in terms of conversion rates. And then I think what's sort of interesting is this team hit this moment, right? over the last month, I'd say, where they actually became the sort of team, because Rutherford followed up with, followed up that quote. The full quote is not just, we're a playoff team if everything goes right. It follows up with, our goal is to become a team where we can cope with some things going against us, right? And I don't think they were that team all season. Truly, I don't. But I think they have been for about the last 6 weeks. And
yeah, I might even roll that to like January 1st, roughly. But
I don't think so. But they listed too much in that like late January, like right before the All-Star break. You had like that loss in Columbus to the Blue Jackets. You had like the lotto line, and then they stopped driving play for no reason. The top six struggles remained pronounced. The club stopped scoring. I don't know. I thought you had a pretty loose run for this team. And so I would say, honestly, it's like since the All-Star, right, the week before the All-Star break, too, was wildly uninspired.
Yes, they were. They had their eyes on the All-Star break 100% during that week.
So I'm just saying, like, I would put it since the All-Star break, I think you've seen a team that can have things go wrong, right? That can stop scoring goals. They were a bottom until this last three-game win streak. And I actually think this is opens up on an interesting conversation, which we'll get into in previous segments. Until this latest win streak, the Canucks were a bottom third offense since the All-Star break, rolling along at a 91-point pace. Now, it all looks different because they went three in a row, and we're still talking about small samples. But like they did have this moment of struggle, and given how appalling their special teams were during that stretch, given the Demko injury, right, given the Dakota Joshua injury, you know, things kind of piled up. Some things started to go wrong for this team. They weren't getting every bounce in terms of their finishing rate. Their penalty killing save percentage was unsustainably low. All this stuff that they actually had to cope with, and they were able to keep winning games, keep winning enough to run out the clock on like the Oilers, for example, because their defense leveled up. And they controlled play at an astounding rate, 5-on-5, and that made them the sort of team where your structure can overcome some bad things occurring. And I think that's a level that this team didn't have necessarily even in October, November, when they were racking up wins, partly as a result of, you know, conversion luck.
Well, I think the defense is the big story, the team defense. We've talked about it before, but, and, you know, we'll get into how the top six looks
now. We've talked about it all season.
We have. We've talked about it a lot, but to me, that's the, especially like if we're talking, you know, Rick Tocchet for Jack Adams, which I feel like he has to be a lock at this point or close to it.
I think if things had gone squirrely,
yes,
even over the last week, if things had gone squirrely, I think Brunette has been so wildly impressive that there was a chance of kicking the door down, but I don't think there is.
But I just think, like, if you want to even more so, if you want to even more so build his case for that award, it's not like they've gotten so much better in season. Like, his coaching has continued to improve this team. They're so much better defensively than they were in October and November.
Well, and that defensive turnaround from where they were before they hired Tocchet is, like,
mind-blowing.
This last week for me, I feel like should be the exclamation mark on Tocchet's Jack Adams candidacy. And here's why, in my mind. I was thinking about it a little bit while I was away. Right after they lost, I can't remember which game it was that they lost, but Tocchet sort of challenged them again in terms of the work rate, right? And we've seen this. Like, what's sort of been interesting is that Tocchet is not, certainly not publicly, and from what I understand, not privately either. It was after the loss of the Caps. The Tocchet comes out there and challenges guys, right? Like, when this team plays badly, he has that look on the bench sometimes, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And then he backs it up by commenting like that in the media.
Yeah.
Like, a guy's going through a tough streak, tough stretch, he's going to tell him. Team's not playing hard enough, he's going to say it. You know, and I think there's what's sort of been an interesting dynamic is he hasn't had many occasions to be too upset with his team's performance, but almost every time, in fact, I would say every time, he's gone to coach the heck out of this team by challenging them, right? Because the specific thing was our work rate's not high enough. We need to be, like, you know, getting into our groove right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the last three games, they've outworked like teams that aren't very good, which, those are games that are easy at this time of year to
loaf
take for granted.
Through. Yeah.
We've seen that.
100%.
And this team's found like this level over the past week, following up another time where Tocchet's challenged this group. Like, there's no like new age lovey-dovey stuff here. This is a you know, a tough, straightforward guy who seems to be very comfortable challenging this group of players. And every time he does, he seems to get a response.
Yeah.
To me, that's why he, like, the defensive stuff, you know, the power play stuff, whatever. I mean, there's pros and cons on his candidacy overall. I think number one, you know, the team's year-over-year improvement can't be ignored, and that's going to be the headline item. But for me, the reason that he has to win it is that every time this guy's gone and challenged his group, he's gotten the response. That's a mark of, like, a coach and a team that have something, you know, simpatico going on.
I want to talk more about the top six and the new look top six, but just moving along with the whiteboard here, another headline: Jonathan Lekkerimäki assigned by the Canucks to Abbotsford, in Abbotsford, in fact, but, and this is per Chris Faber's piece at Canucks.com, he could still play for Sweden at the World Championship. So as Faber says, Lekkerimäki will practice and the exact word here is perhaps play with the Abbotsford Canucks. But at any rate, he's in Abbotsford practicing with the team, the Canucks' top prospect, joining Elias Pettersson, the defenseman who will stay in Abbotsford. But we'll see what happens with Lekkerimäki and whether he gets in games, whether he goes back to Sweden for the World Championships.
Club always wanted Lekkerimäki to come to Abbotsford. I think they really believe in Abbotsford right now as a developmental spot. When you see the returns on Höglander and Podkolzin, it's hard to disagree with them. Given what Lekkerimäki did in a tough pro league this year, I don't think it's a stretch of the imagination to think that he might be, you know, one of the 10 most dangerous goal scorers the moment he steps on an NHL or an AHL ice sheet. You'd love to add that for the playoffs, right? For Abbotsford, you'd love to add that in terms of what you're marketing.
Box office draw.
Out in the valley.
Yep.
So, I think the club would love for him to be here. If he makes Team Sweden, that's such a big honor. But we saw with, like, Linus Karlsson, you know, was it 2 years ago? Like, these young guys sort of can make the World Championships and then they sit. Is that better for, you know, like, then they're the 13th forward, especially once an NHL team
gets eliminated in the first round and somebody comes over. Yeah.
Let's be real, William Nylander. And then, it's... It's a complicated sort of set of items for the Canucks to navigate. I find it very hard to believe that the club's preference in a perfect world would be to keep him at Abbotsford.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Broadsheet. Now, this is not your typical rumor update necessarily, but of course, the Elias Lindholm health or injury situation very much in the spotlight right now. Played on Saturday, scored an empty net goal against his former team, but didn't practice on either side of that game on Friday or at yesterday's practice. And the update from Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts today said that the team, everyone involved, managing this on a day-to-day basis. He thought there was going to be an appointment with a doctor for more information either yesterday or early this week. And as he says, everyone wants clarity. If it's something he can play, it's something he can play through, but it's something that's bothering him. So the question is, can he continue to play through it and manage it with rest days like this, or is it something more serious? And no morning skate today, so we don't know Lindholm's status for tonight's game, but Rick Tocchet will speak to the media, I think, around 3 o'clock. We'll find out then. But this is going to be an interesting one to follow this week. Potentially a really big deal for the Canucks going into the playoffs.
Also seems like Dakota Joshua's getting close.
Yep.
So I think the lineup update from Rick Tocchet around 3:30 is going to be an interesting one to track. Does Joshua return against the Kings? Would certainly be a big boost. The Lindholm status, I mean, we'll have to see, right? You get to this point in the season and most of the NHL is banged up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very few healthy players, fully healthy, 100% guys in the NHL at this point. There will be even fewer once you play a week worth of playoff hockey, and we all know what the attrition looks like from there. You know, there are injuries you can play through, but there are risks associated with playing through it. There are, you know, additional calculations that UFAs have to weigh in terms of, am I going to get surgery? Am I going to try and manage the injury? If I get surgery now, can I be ready for next season? Am I missing part of next season? What does that do to my market?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a very high stakes, potentially. I don't know the details, right? But this is potentially a very complicated and high stakes nexus, right? Between human performance, human health, and the business of this sport. In addition to a player's desire to win, and this team has a chance to win.
And I think the other part of this is from Lindholm's perspective. Like, even if you're just looking at this if you were the player and you're just looking at it purely from a rational self-interest, right? Like, what can I do to preserve my ability to get a big contract in the summer? You might think that goes to, well, shut it down, right? Preserve your health. But this is a guy, like, he's something of a distressed asset as he's going into unrestricted free agency here. Yes, he just got a big haul. But compared to where he was not that long ago and the way he was looked about,
he struggled all season.
Yeah, but I don't just mean because of his time in Vancouver. I mean because of that struggle all season and the downward trend in his game from the highs on the Johnny Gaudreau and the Matthew Tkachuk line, right? A big playoffs could do a lot for him. And I'm not saying he's in like a crisis mode going into unrestricted free agency. He's still going to be an in-demand player, but it's not as if he's put himself in such a strong position that it's like, hey, I'll just shut it down and I'll make my money.
No.
He has a chance to earn a lot of money with a really good performance in the playoffs. Of course, you got to be healthy, or you want to be healthy, or in something as close to optimal health as possible to put yourself in a position to do it. So it's complicated. It's fascinating. We'll see what more information we get as the week progresses on Elias Lindholm. Lineup notes, as mentioned, no morning skate today, so who knows if we will see Elias Lindholm in the lineup when they take on the LA Kings. Yesterday at practice, as you mentioned, Dakota Joshua back on the ice with the team in a non-contact jersey, but still really good to see Joshua back out there. Forward group they didn't remain the same because with Lindholm out, there was some shuffling. So Suter moved down to center of a third line. Phil DiGiuseppe was skating with JT Miller and Brock Besser. And then on the fourth line, you had Ilya Mikheyev, Teddy Bluger, and Sam Lafferty. So a little bit of a shuffle, maybe a preview of what they'll look like if Lindholm isn't able to go or isn't able to go for an extended stretch. But we'll see how they line up. They shuffled the blue line a little bit yesterday at practice as well. It was Hughes, Myers, Zadorov, Hronek, Soucy, and Cole. And I just thought that was interesting given the load management cycle we've seen from the team over the last week or so.
Given that we've heard very little about traction in contract talks between the Canucks and Philip Hronek.
That's a good point.
That's the cynical way of looking
at it. Cynical? No.
That's the cynical way of looking at it. I'm not.
It's an interesting one.
I'm not being serious. I'm just pointing it out.
Playoff forecast. Big one here. I mean, look, we know this hasn't been the playoff forecast necessarily for a long time now, but in terms of seeding, division, all that, the Canucks winning plus a couple of regulation losses on the weekend for the Oilers.
It's over.
Equals the Canucks having an 88% chance to win the Pacific Division per Dom's model. I think Dom has them finishing, or the model, I should say, has them finishing with 111 points on the season, which is a dead heat with Dallas and Colorado for top place in the Western Conference. But let's say they do get to 111 points, which is, you know, only 13 more points than they have right now in 11 games. It's not even that high a bar. Edmonton would have to get 23 out of their remaining 13 games, which is a very, very high bar just to tie the Canucks if the Canucks get to 111. So, yeah, as you said, you can pretty much put this one away, barring an incredible collapse or an incredible heater, or really both, a combination of both from these two teams. The Canucks are going to win the Pacific Division,
wild,
which is an incredible accomplishment. And then really the big question is who they play in the playoffs. And that will depend obviously on where they finish relative to Colorado, who's on an incredible heater right now, relative to Dallas, who they play this week. And then, of course, what happens with Vegas and Nashville, who's also on a heater, but it's very much looking Vegas or Nashville in the first round for the Canucks right now.
Dom's model, though, still gives the LA Kings a 25% shot at finishing fourth in the Pacific. So it also still gives the Nashville Predators a 13% shot of climbing ahead of the Winnipeg Jets. So some sort of downstream chances.
Yeah, the Jets have been really scuffling too. So
that we get a curveball yet. But yeah, please, please not Nashville. I don't want that travel. All right. I also don't know if anyone wants that smoke. Nashville.
I mean, a month ago, you would have been like, yeah, Nashville. Oh, now, I don't know.
A month ago, I'm going to a bachelor party this weekend in Denver with our 650 colleague, for our 650 colleague, Dmitry Filipovich. Congratulations to him. And there's two games that the Avalanche play that weekend, one against the Rangers and one against the Predators. And I was like pushing hard to go to the Rangers game. I was like, that's the premium opponent. We went to the Preds game because it was more affordable. And now I'm like, if this team
could
just
be a playoff preview.
If this team just plays two more games without dropping a point,
yep,
it's like, that's a historic matchup. Bring it to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, Quick gambling update, or gambling odds update. The books are now listing Quinn Hughes versus the field for Norris. Quinn Hughes -600, field +400.
I can't really imagine what would have to happen in the final four weeks of the regular season.
I'll tell you the one, because you can get Cale Makar at +400. Like, if you want to bet field and you want to bet Cale Makar.
I guess the Avs are on a heater right now.
Just bet the field. Bet the field, because you're getting the same odds anyway. And then you also get, because to me, the interesting potential one is Roman Josi.
Mm.
Like, we've seen in the past that crazy late run from a Corey Perry or a Taylor Hall that steals the Hart Trophy from a guy we'll all look back and say was more deserving.
Was the better player, yeah.
So, that's the outside. Now, if you want to bet Josi, if you want to bet the outside shot at that, he's +6,600. That to me is the only guy who can take it from him. So I wouldn't bet the field. Just going out there to say it. I also want to note this one. Hellebuck scuffling a bit. He's still +800 or -800, excuse me, to win the Vezina. So he's basically got it wrapped up. You can get the field at +500. Sergei Bobrovsky's second in Vezina at +800. Thatcher Demko +1,000. Still, according to the markets, a probable finalist. So that's how that stacks up.
There's your update for today. That's the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break at 1 o'clock. Our old pal, Gemma Karsten Smith, is going to join us. Thrilled to have Gemma back on the beat and back on the show today. We got an open segment up next, so we'll get into some of the storylines that we missed over the last week. We'll catch up a little bit. You can text in as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.